Hello and welcome in. It is the best of the game. John Kurtz with you here. It is K-State Football Media Day. It's from 4 to 5:30, so thus, we do not have time to do a live show today. We will try and bring you everything we can from K-State Football Media Day over the coming days and weeks as we unload that bag. But for now, we'll play you some of the best interviews that we've had over the last few weeks. Going to hear from Nick Leckie in just a moment. Cole Manbeck, Sam Mellinger, Bill Snyder, Stan Weber, Sean Snyder, and David Ubben, all in the next couple of hours. Without further ado, let's get you into Nick Leckie, former Wildcat offensive lineman. We had a chance to talk with him a couple of weeks ago. He played on the 2003 K-State Big 12 championship team. So we asked him, does this group in 2017 appear to him to be of the caliber of a Big 12 champion?
It does. And I think the first thing that I always look at is your quarterback. Does your quarterback have at least a year of experience? And Earth has that under his belt. He has a year of experience. And, I mean, he should have 2 years more for that freak injury. But he's got that time under center. He knows the plays throughout, backwards and forwards, and he can make those audibles, with 5 seconds left on the play clock to switch to a new play. And I think he can handle the ball well.
It's interesting you bring that up because so many people talk about the jump from year one to year two and starting quarterbacks under Bill Snyder. And you got to see like the evolution of L. Roberson, how much more comfortable he was in 2003 from 2002. How big of a difference did that make for him just from what you could tell when you were playing here?
So his first full year was 01. And I remember he made a couple plays. Like I think he went the wrong way on an option down in Oklahoma. And I think he almost fumbled the ball. And then, as years two and three, that confidence level for him was it was amazing. Like the jump was just silly because when you have that confidence, and you know what to expect from Coach Snyder, your meetings, your practice schedule, how to take care of your body, all those things come together. And then as you play, your confidence grows. And it's going to be cool to see Ertz play, especially his senior year as well. So anytime you have a senior quarterback, I always look for good things.
Nick, there is always a lot of conversation about bringing a starting quarterback back, but given, the fact that you played offensive line, I wanted to ask you about the importance of bringing back so much of the offensive line. What is there to be said about how much that group developed over the course of last season and now bringing back 4 out of those 5 guys? Is that almost as important as bringing back your quarterback?
It's 100% important, of course.
Well, you've got to say that, Nick. I mean, you're the offensive line.
No, right? You do. I think even if I wasn't, though, you have to, because I think, the guys in the middle really paved the way for giving quarterback time to throw, running back, opening up lanes, all the basic stuff. But I think if you're a quarterback and if you can take one less thing off of your plate in the sense of you trust your offensive line, you've been with your center for is going on your second year now with your center with Reed. And I think that with Dalton Reisner at right tackle or at tackle and Scott Brandt at the other tackle spot, I think as a quarterback, you have one less thing to worry about. And then as coaches, when you look at it from a coaching perspective, you can dial up plays and your offensive line is going to get the job done because they did the job last year.
We're talking right now with Nick Leckie, former Wildcat on the game. As far as the offensive line is concerned, we hear so much about Charlie Dickey and what a great coach he is, and certainly I put a lot of stock in that, and I think we've seen time and time again he does a great job with the groups that he has. What do you make a great offensive line coach? Because I feel like as someone who did not play football, that's one of the areas where I'm the most in the dark on is the offensive line. What makes a guy that good at being a coach on the offensive line?
I think your mindset Coach Dickey's not really like he'll yell and scream at you, but he's also going to be fair. And I think you have to be fair and you have to have the same sort of rules week in, week out, because you can't be confusing the offensive linemen with, drawing up a new scheme each week. They have their rules for pass protection, they have their rules for running, and those are consistent. And I've seen him out there coach a couple times, and you can tell he's got a genuine love for his offensive linemen. And I think, for one, obviously it starts with bringing in the right people. That's number one, people who want to be there. And then, he can mold people. He can really mold people into becoming great offensive linemen with his technique, with his style. And so I think that's first and foremost, is just being a good human being, being consistent, and just believing in what he's preaching.
Who was the best offensive line coach that you had during your career?
I don't know. I had Paul Dunn and Bob Alexander, and I was with Paul Dunn for 3 years, and I liked him a lot. And so I guess it'd be only Paul Alexander because – or Paul Dunn, I'm sorry. Paul Dunn, because I was with him for 3 years, so I liked him. But, you know, I like Bob Stanley as well.
I wanted to ask you something else that kind of plays on your history as an offensive lineman. Back in that 2003 team, obviously with Darren Sproles, you had a very different kind of running back to work with than what K-State is going into this year with guys like Alex Morris and Justin Sillman, who are more like, you know, freight train types that just run people over and don't have the dancing around skills quite as much. Is it harder with someone like Sproles where you don't know exactly where he's going to be bursting through the line? I mean, would you prefer, if you had the choice, to work with someone who's just, you know, exactly where they're going?
No, and I think with the running back and O-line dynamic, I always appreciate a running back who's not going to hesitate, who's going to, you know, you have your hole that, you know, you're trying to block for the running back. It's like 54. I mean, you know, the running back's going between the right guard, right tackle. And so that way you're working your butt off to make sure that hole is open, you know, no matter if you're left tackle to right tackle. And the thing with Sproles that was so damn cool was that he hit the hole so hard. So if you have to, as a center or guard or tackle, you have to block your guy for 1 second, maybe 1.5 seconds, and Sproles has already passed the line of scrimmage. So that was I don't think Sproles gets enough credit for his ability to attack the hole, as they say. And, I mean, like I said, it's split second where you just really have to cover up your defensive lineman. And Sproles has already passed you. He's working on second level. So I think that's what you need. And I think that's the trait that I see with Barnes and some too, is just that aggression and that just confidence of just, man, I'm going to hit this hole like a freight train. And it's like, you're going to break through arm tackles, and you're going to get those 5-6 extra yards.
Talking right now with Nick Leckie here on the game. On Darren Sproles, like, do you have a good story of him, like, embarrassing somebody in practice? I know I'm putting you on the spot
Everybody. Everybody. No, I don't remember Sproles embarrassing anybody or having that, like, dang, this guy's legit. I think it was like 0-2 versus USC when I was, like, I was blocking, and I remember he ran to the left. And then I remember thinking, oh, man, they got him hemmed up, and he popped it out for 5 or 6 yards. And to me, I always picture USC, you know, you're getting the cream of the crop athletes. You know, you're getting your pick of the litter. And for him to be so much more athletic than the defenders from USC, I was like, okay, this guy's legit. I mean, we already knew that, but it just kind of, to me, it solidified him as like, okay, this guy's a, you know, Heisman contender. This guy's, you know, king of college football type running back.
Again, we're talking here with Nick Leckie. As far as Bill Snyder is concerned, still coaching right now, I know that is going to be one of the big storylines this year, his health. But how amazing is it to you that he is still out there doing what he's doing, considering, I mean, you played for him, what, like 13, 14 years ago, and he is still out there doing it?
Well, I think for him, and it's funny, I think people always ask me that, and I always say 2 years. And I think I've been saying 2 years since, you know, 2008 through 2010. And for him, I just don't think he doesn't like to do anything else. Like, I don't see him, you know, having a cigar on his back deck, you know, drinking scotch or anything like that. Like, I see him watching football. I see him reading scouting reports. You know, that's just what he loves to do. You know, he's founded his calling, and that's football. It's coaching football. It's watching film. My favorite Bill Snyder story ever was, I think it was 2010, 2011, I don't know. I came back for a game. And I remember the KU game, and I remember, you know, he's on the sideline wearing his bowl game jacket from 95, and it's maybe 30 minutes after the game, and I go up to his office, and I go in and say hello, and he changed back into a suit and wearing socks, and he's standing up watching film in his office of the KU game. And I was like, goodness. So that's Bill Snyder, and that just, you know, he loves what he's doing. You know, he's going to retire and play golf in a suit. He can't do that. He can't wear a suit and play golf. It's not happening.
Nick, I know that you're pretty decent at making it back to Manhattan for games here and there. Do you know anything about your fall schedule and how many times we may see you at the Bill this season?
I'm trying to I know we're going to go to the Vanderbilt game. I'm pretty stoked about that one in Nashville. That's going to be sweet.
That's right.
I'm thinking two or three times, I think, is when I'm going to try and get back. I think my wife and I and some friends will try and go twice, and we'll bring the kids once. They love doing that. And we took them last year, and they absolutely loved it.
You know, I saw on your Twitter account earlier today, and actually this happens quite a bit. Like, you're very good at retweeting pictures of food or food articles. I was reading about the best wing spots in Kansas City earlier today. Do you have Nashville scouted out then?
No, I don't. Not yet. I can't tell if, because, you know, when you go with a large group of people, you really can't scout it out because you kind of got to go with the flow. So I know there's a few spots. Usually now I'm kind of a burger guy, where, like, back in the day, if you asked me what my deathbed meal was, I would have said a bone-in ribeye. But now it's a cheeseburger. You give me a bacon cheeseburger, and that's you really can't beat it.
Okay, there you go. Well, hey, when we get the details on everything for Powercat Game Day in Nashville, we'll have a bacon cheeseburger waiting for you, Mr. Lucky.
That's perfect. That sounds great.
All right. Hey, thanks for joining us, man. This has been fun. Hopefully we'll do it again soon.
Sounds great. Thank you, guys.
All right, there is Nick Lecky with us here on the Best of the Game. We'll roll on here in Hour 1 with Cole Manbeck. Coming up next, you're listening to the Best of the Game. Back on the Best of the Game, K-State Football Media Day taking place right now. So we will be back at it tomorrow with plenty of audio from K-State Football Media Day. For now, we turn to a conversation we had recently with our friend Cole Manbeck from the Powercat Game Day crew. Been in the discussion point for a while what his intro will be when we get to the fall. He is campaigning for an intro, and he had a couple ideas for an intro to his segment.
Well, I had a couple. The first one I initially texted you, which I assume you're not referring to, was Despacito.
No, not the music. Not the music. I'm talking about the clip that you want to make sure is in the intro.
Oh, I got you. The clip that I was hoping you guys could put together as the intro was John Curry telling me at his press conference about Jamar Samuels and Frank Martin leaving that he wished the receipt had stayed in the trash can.
Would that possibly be this right here?
And I promise you, Cole, I wish it had stayed in the trash.
That right there?
That is correct.
Why do I not get notifications when a Cole to Frank meeting is going to happen?
Let's go ahead and I've preserved the full clip here for prosperity, including the 6 seconds of silence between question and answer.
I'm wondering how that just magically showed up in the compliance office and how that came about being reported to you guys.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
It was brought to, it was found, basically. It was found on the floor or on the trash at the grocery store, and it was brought to the compliance office. And I promise you, Cole, I wish it had stayed in the trash.
maybe Sean Spicer could start handling those things when they come up in the future now that he's looking for work. Oh, my goodness.
Sitting here laughing, remembering that moment that, you know, John was really shooting lasers out of his eyes. It was a very uncomfortable situation, and one that ended up getting made fun of nationally, as you guys well know, for the reasoning and how it was found and discovered. So it's a very funny moment. I know a lot of people won't find it funny because, you know, what happened and transpired before that. But that is a good memory to bring back.
You know what? If you can't find the humor in that, sitting here, like, what, 6 years later, you can't find the humor in that. You need to lighten up, Francis.
I get the humor. I just think that we've got important topics to get into with Cole. He's too important. His time is too valuable to be working on childish things like this.
I bet you if we took a poll of listeners right now, they would have more fun and entertainment value out of listening to how uncomfortable that clip is than talking about Jesse Ertz's sixth year of eligibility. Okay, I guarantee you.
Who knows what average K-State fan knows to see Jamar Samuels throw something in the trash at a grocery store, digs through the trash, looks at the receipt, sees Curtis Malone wire transfer $200, knows who Curtis Malone is, knows to take it to the K-State compliance office, and what K-State fan is actually going to turn that in to the compliance office? I mean, there's so many questions that I have around that whole logic of it being found in a trash can in a grocery store or on the floor that it just blows my mind.
This really did turn into a Cult of Frank meeting, huh? I will say, Curtis Malone, we should probably never speak that name because that is the one part of the story that doesn't help us, knowing what we know now about Curtis Malone. But I will say we had Jamar on last week, and I'm now regretting not asking him if he makes sure to, if he is throwing away a receipt in the trash can, like throw a bunch of stuff on top of it.
There's no way you were going to ask him that question. You would not have asked him
Well, I taped the interview. I would have asked him, like, off the air.
So? It doesn't matter if you can't put it out for the people.
Well, if it was a good response, then I would have asked him to put it on the air. I would have tried to do something like that, for sure.
I'm just hearing everyone screaming at the radio, talk about K-State football.
Cole Manbeck is on with us. Hey, Cole, Will Geary's going to be back. Yawn. How much of an impact does that make this year?
Well, it's huge, John and Tyler. I think it's a big deal, obviously, with the tackle being a critical position where K-State typically lacks depth, and a lot of people lack depth. It's a position that's hard to find. So anytime you can get your all-Big 12 defensive tackle back and make sure he's with the team through summer workouts, and as long as all goes well, stays with the team and starts this next year, I think it's huge for the defense. You know, him and Trey Deshaun are a very formidable pair up front at the D-tackle position. And if you would have lost Gary, you know, you would have really been depending on some guys who haven't really proven themselves yet. There's just not a lot of scholarship numbers at the D-tackle position. So that's huge. You know, when it comes to defending the run, K-State's been so good up front. Gary's a big part of that. You add Deshaun to the mix going into his second year as a starter. I think it's significant, especially when you think about the inexperienced K-State as a linebacker. You need a guy like Gary up there that's going to keep the offensive linemen from being able to get to that second level and shift the linebackers and let them roam free.
Cole, something else that was talked about a lot at Media Days is the new coaches that we have in the Big 12 and just how different of an atmosphere it was. And I know that for John and I, we were pretty impressed with what we saw from Matt Rhule out of Baylor. Lincoln Riley for Oklahoma was okay, but Tom Herman was just he just did not win that press conference, in our opinion. But how did you feel like, from someone who was kind of reading the headlines and everything, how do you feel like things went?
Yeah, you know, I think Tom Herman's the type of guy that's probably never going to win a press conference, just the way his personality goes over. I think behind the scenes, he's a pretty tough guy from the sounds of it. And, you know, I just don't think he's a guy that's going to really be great with the media and dealing with them. And yeah, I watched it and it was a little bit uncomfortable hearing him speak to the media. But that, you know, just speaking of that in Texas, that's probably one of my most concerning games for K-State coming up this season is the road trip to Texas, you know, being the second Big 12 game. You know, they're going to be fired up. Their fans are back on board. It seems they've been unified a bit because they got their guy in Tom Herman. Now, we don't know how they're going to start the season. If they start the season really well with Herman, you know, the fans are going to really rally behind, and Texas will play with some confidence. So that's a concerning game for me because that's K-State's first Big 12 road game. But, you know, back to your other question, Tyler, about the press conference, everything. I thought Lincoln Riley was impressive. Still curious to see how he handles the whole, you know, the whole shift and being that head coach at Oklahoma and not just the offensive coordinator. And then I agree with you on Matt Rhule, but I think Baylor – has a little bit of a road. He's got an uphill climb, and I would be surprised if Baylor finishes in the top half of the conference this year.
Cole Manbeck talking with us. It seems like Jesse Ertz is not very confident at all that he is going to get that sixth year of eligibility, and is treating this year basically as his senior year right now. How surprising is that to you based on what we were hearing this time last year?
I mean, I've read the bylaws. I've read the rules around medical redshirts, and it still just baffles me that he wouldn't be a guy that qualifies for a medical redshirt. You know, the bottom line is the NCAA says they're there for the student-athlete, and a guy that's torn his ACL twice in a four-year period, essentially, senior year of high school, and then his sophomore season at K-State, you know, how he does not qualify for a medical redshirt, a guy with two severe injuries. That, you know what, you could say what you want. He was able to practice his freshman year at K-State, but there's a difference between practicing and, you know, being really classified as game-ready.
And so for those reasons, I would think that he would qualify for a medical red shirt. I don't understand that, you know, Baker Mayfield, Oklahoma, he got essentially, it wasn't a medical red shirt, but was granted that extra year because of his walk-on status, and that was approved. So, you know, he's able to play this year. And it just seems a little hypocritical to me that, you know, a guy like Jesse Ertz isn't given that extra year of eligibility. So it's a blow, because anytime you could have a guy that would be going into his third year starting, you know, that's a blow. And when you think about the K-State offense in 2018, if guys don't leave early, you know, Byron Pringle will technically be a senior that year in 18, and so will Dalton Reisner. Both of them stay. You got Alex Barnes and Justin Silman that would be back in terms of eligibility. You got Scott Franz. You got Abdul Beecham. He would be a senior at guard. Dayton Valentine, Zuber, all those guys, Strickland. Your whole offense is essentially back the next 2 years. And so, you know, if you lose Ertz, that does blow. That's a sting. But you guys know I'm high on Skylar Thompson as well. So you just have to hope that he'll be ready that year when it comes to that point.
Well, Cole, appreciate the time and joining us here. Always nice to talk football whenever we can. But before I let you go, we got a request. I got to play this one more time.
And I promise you, Cole, I wish you'd have stayed in the trash.
I promise you, Cole, we will get an intro made for you involving that clip in some form or fashion.
Cole, before you go, I want you to weigh in on our debate from yesterday. If you got a free ticket to a Nebraska game, would you go?
No.
Yes.
Oh, come on. You got to go to the game.
Well, who's Nebraska playing?
Wisconsin.
If the game was in Wisconsin, I would go. Madison's supposed to be a lot of fun. I'd be in for that. Lincoln, no, I wouldn't go.
All right.
I tastefully disagree.
Tell me if K-State is at home that weekend.
K-State's at Texas.
Mm-hmm. I'd stay home and watch K-State play Texas.
Mm-hmm. All right.
DVR.
All right.
Okay. All right.
Look, you know how I feel about Nebraska and their fan base, and just to be around all of them, you know, it would really bother me.
Well, hey, I can't blame you for the fan base part. The fan base part is bad, but that's why I would take it as an opportunity to troll, but I realize not everybody can handle it. We're getting right back into where we were at yesterday. Cole, I appreciate the time. I will make a mental note now to stop digging through trash cans to find you a ticket to a Nebraska football game this year.
Please do. Thank you.
All right, there is Cole Manbeck with us here on the Best of the Game. Hour one of the show rolls on next with Sam Mellinger, our conversation with him from Big 12 Media Days back in Frisco, Texas. You're listening to the Best of the Game. Back in here on the Best of the Game, John Kurtz with you. K-State Football Media Day taking place right now, so we are bringing you the best interviews from the show over the last couple weeks. One of those undoubtedly was a conversation that we had with Sam Mellinger, who was at Big 12 Media Days in Frisco, Texas. Talked a lot of K-State, but we did start with some Chiefs. He's having about as much trouble making sense of the Chiefs offseason as everybody else.
Anybody that I talk to who has, you know, like an NFL connection, you know, Gil Brandt, I think, is probably still here. And you know, just like random text messages and stuff, like the first question is always like, hell's going on with the Chiefs? You know, I don't think anybody really knows. And, you know, the Chiefs, they fired John Dorsey, you know, dang near a month ago now, and, you know, not a peep out of them other than, you know, this sort of canned, vague letter to season ticket holders that Clark wrote. And I know they're going to have a press conference next week, which I think is really awkward. It's the first time the owners are going to talk since firing John Dorsey, and it's also the day that they're introducing the replacement for John Dorsey. That's going to be, like, super awkward and I think a big PR mistake, you know, by the Chiefs, but that's not my department.
Think we'll ever get concrete answers really as to what happened with John Dorsey?
I mean, the one person I think who can say is John, you know, and he just, you know, hasn't. He's been radio silent. You know, I've texted him back or texted him a few times, and, you know, he'll reply just, you know, like, you know, thanks, good to talk, you know, just super vague, not anything right about football. And I think that's probably how he's being with a lot of people. And he's the one, you know, because Clark's not going to talk. You know, and, you know, John, you know, would fit the profile of the guy that would, but I don't think it's in him to do it.
Getting to some of the football-related festivities going on down here in Dallas, it's been, for us, a very weird offseason for K-State because it's a program that's so synonymous with not making any headlines off the field. And you have an offseason here that starts with Coach Snyder and his cancer diagnosis. You have the Corey Sutton standoff, and then you have the Scott France news here just a couple of weeks ago. For someone that's a little bit outside of Manhattan but still kind of in the K-State bubble, what's your perception of what this offseason has been like for K-State?
Yeah, I mean, it's different, right? And you know, I would say that the Sutton deal was a self-inflicted wound. But the other two, what are you going to do? You know, I mean, things that just happen. And, you know, those and I think, again, very self-inflicted wound on the Sutton stuff. But the way that K-State has handled, you know, Bill Snyder's, what do we call it? I mean, just diagnosis and recovery and treatment and all this. I don't know how they could have done it better. And the Scott France thing, you know, same thing. And I don't, maybe I shouldn't say this on a Manhattan radio station, but one of the things I like about the Scott France thing is I don't think that this is a unique K-State thing. You know what I mean? That this kid comes out and his teammates, by all accounts, respect it and we move forward. The reason that I really like the story is that I don't think that's unique to K-State. I think there's a lot of colleges around the country where this would be treated similarly. And I know, I hear, and you guys probably do too, from a lot of people, you know, why is this news? I don't care about it now. And I think, like, that's great, you know? And I don't think it's not necessarily news to me either, but it is to a lot of people. And I think that, you know, we're moving, and Michael Sam was not as smooth as everybody a lot of times likes to point out. But it seems like this has been a little bit smoother than that seemed like. But we also know, all three of us know with 100% certainty that there are guys in that locker room who aren't entirely comfortable with what Scott said and aren't, entirely comfortable with, you know, that's who he is. But to me, that the peer pressure is now for those guys to keep quiet and to go along with, you know, the acceptance is really, really significant.
That's a very good point. Sam Ellinger here with us from the Kansas City Star. We do talk about Bill Snyder and his health, and he hates talking about it. But as far as the succession plan is concerned, I mean, Sean always comes up. What is your opinion on where you think K-State should go as far as that is concerned? If it's going to be next year, if it's going to be later on down the road?
Yeah, I mean, Jim Leavitt is the guy that makes the most sense to me. You know, he's done it before, knows the culture. It seems like Jim Leavitt has most of the pluses that Sean would bring, but also experience that Sean doesn't have. And that to me is, and I think he, by all accounts, like, loves the university, would love to, you know, would hitchhike his way to Manhattan to take the job. Excuse me. So that's the way that I would go. But I don't, you know, without knowing really like the inner workings too much of, you know, I've heard some things, and I'm sure you guys have too, of the relationship between Sean and some of the other coaches. And I'd want to have a better feel, though, and this is something Gene Taylor can do, of, you know, how that dynamic would work and how much of that staff Sean could keep. Because it's not, you know, the biggest argument, right, for just sliding Sean in there is stability. But it's not going to be stable if the coaches don't stick around. You know, if he has to hire a whole new staff, it's not going to be that stable. So those are some of the things that I'd want to know. But look, man, like it seems like they tried it, and nobody involved in that is still with the university, basically. But they tried it their own way once before, and they got Ron Prince, right? And so there's an argument that, you know, let the guy do it his way this time, and what's the worst that could happen?
We talked earlier about the off-field headlines around this K-State program this offseason, and one that I excluded was the departure of John Curry Taylor coming in. Yeah. What's your perception about the new direction of K-State athletics as a whole, with Gene Taylor being pretty much a complete opposite in terms of personality and everything like that to John Curry?
Yeah, he is the opposite of John in some kind of important ways. I actually like John, and I thought that he did a better job than some people give him credit for in terms of, you know, facilities and a lot of, you know, program infrastructure. I thought he did a good job. There was just what he did a rotten job with is just sort of is a communication or relationships. I mean, just sort of like ingratiating himself as part of the community and the program. And I think his relationship with coaches, I mean, none of this is really new, but, you know, he could have done a much better job with that. Gene Taylor, I have no idea how he's going to do in sort of the 30,000-foot view that I thought John did a good job of fundraising, that kind of thing. But as far as, like, relationships and dealing with coaches, you know, my view of him, talking to him a few times, is that, you know, aces, you know. And every time I talk to him, I just think, man, that guy should be a Division I athletic director. And if he's going to be a Division I athletic director, Kansas State is exactly the kind of place where that should happen. I mean, he just seems solid. Everything you hear about him is, if he says it, it's true. You can trust it. You know, he'll keep his word. I mean, these are things that I think are vitally important for anybody in that position, but especially in his position at that university at this time, with, you know, some things, and who knows if it's going to happen next week or next year or in 5 years or whatever, but at some point they're going to have to replace the most important coach in Kansas State history, and that's probably underselling it. And Gene Taylor's going to have to be the guy to do that, and he seems equipped. It doesn't seem like that moment will be too big for him.
All right, there is Sam Mellinger with us here on the Best of the Game. We'll wrap up hour one of the show next with the one and only head coach Bill Snyder. You're listening to the Best of the Game. Hour one of the Best of the Game continues. We are out talking with Bill Snyder and others at Big 12 or at K-State Media Days, excuse me, right now. Speaking of Bill Snyder at Big 12 Media Days, he came by our table. We had a chance to sit down with him and started with a discussion point we have not had a chance to hit with him yet. That was Bob Stoops, one of his former pupils, retiring here recently. But Snyder actually didn't seem all that surprised that Bob Stoops had retired.
Well, I'm too old to get caught off guard, so that's, you know, that doesn't have, nothing surprises us anymore. But you know, it wasn't anything that I necessarily expected. I didn't know that it was going to take place, but like I say, it didn't surprise me a great deal.
Have you spoken with Coach Stoops since that happened?
I have. In fact, I was with him. What is today? Probably. Couple of days ago up in Iowa City at Bobby Elliott's funeral. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Did you do you have any advice for Bob Stoops heading into retirement?
No, I don't give advice to anybody. Everybody runs their own life. You know, and he'll do it the right way, and, you know, he's committed to retirement. You know, he just really wants to be able to spend some time doing things he wants to do, and I can appreciate that a great deal.
K-State head football coach Bill Snyder with us here on the game. You know, obviously a story around the program was last week Scott France making it public that he had come out to the team over a year ago, and now his story has gone public to everybody. The story to me that really stood out is the fact that your team obviously handled it so well when he told them after the 2015 season. How did you go about looking at what the team did and how they reacted to that news?
Well, I thought they were super. And, you know, as you would expect, you know, regardless what the circumstances were, the main thing, I mean, what it really identified for me was the fact that, you know, they cared about Scott and Scott cared about them, and that just helps you, you know, embrace the quote-unquote family environment in the program. You know, it can always be better, but that, you know, when push comes to shove, it you know, shows you that, you know, our youngsters really care.
Was there any reservation from you about him going public with it, that it would become any kind of a distraction for the team?
Well, you know, that was certainly a concern, and Scott and I sat down and talked on several occasions in regards to how we wanted to approach it and whether we wanted to do it that way or another way. And I visited with Holly. She was out of the country on vacation, but we spent some time talking about it, and I wanted to make sure that it was done, if we did it, that it was done the right way. What caught my attention so much were, you know, two things about Scott. And, you know, one, you know, he genuinely, and he's a genuine person, and he truly wanted to help others that might be in the same situation and not really know how to deal with it or be afraid to deal with it in a more public fashion. And he wanted to be able to be free to, and I can appreciate this as well, wanted to be free to live his life, you know. And, you know, he felt, you know, tied to secrecy, so to speak, even though so many, you know, people already knew, you know, in terms of his family and certainly all the players in our program, which is part of his family. and you know, in the thought about how it's going to impact our the entire venue of our program, you know, meaning certainly the players, but also our fans, also people that are at K-State, the administration, the you know, the faculty, etc., etc. And you know, you as you probably well know, I mean, President Myers, Dick has you know, attempted to promote diversity in our program, and this this really was kind of a step forward in that direction for the university as well. But people have been very, very gracious and thoughtful and caring, I think. And in all reality, you know, I expected maybe some more diverse response, which, you know, I haven't heard of at this particular point in time. And everything, you know, I've received, you know, tons of calls and emails and all that goes along with it, and they have all been very, very positive, and so I'm pleased about that for Scott, that it's being received and he's being received the right way.
So. Coach, your recovery, and it's not, I know it's not your favorite topic because you don't like the attention being on yourself, but I wanted to ask you how difficult it's been in comparison to the expectations that you had going into it and what you were told by your doctors when the process first got started. How do you feel today?
Well, I feel about like they told me I would, so I mean, they weren't too far off in that respect, but I feel fine. You know, it just takes time to get through all of it and all the after effects, so to speak, so of the treatments itself. So yeah, I'm doing fine, doing good.
K-State head football coach Bill Snyder is with us here at Big 12 Media Days in Frisco, Texas. Gene Taylor, getting a chance to get to know him. How has your relationship developed with him, and what have been your impressions of him?
Well, I think he's a personable gentleman. He's a humble individual. He cares about what his mission is. He cares about young people. In our program and every athletic program, or I say every sports program in our athletic department, you know, he cares about all the people, you know, staff members, support staff, etc., and has spent time with each and every one of them from the ground floor up, which I appreciate a great deal. You know, because of his, you know, he had to spend some time getting his house sold and getting his children moved and all that goes along with making that transition. So, you know, we've had time together and on several occasions, but haven't gotten to know each other as well as I would like, but we're, you know, closing in on that. But he's done well, and he's treated us well.
Coach, a question about personnel. Back in the spring, it wasn't totally clear what Will Geary's status was with the team. Just wondered if you could give us an update on how things are going there.
Well, Will is, has been back in with us during the summer program, and you know, if he continues to do as well as he's doing right now, things will be fine.
Again, Bill Snyder with us here at Big 12 Media Days. Coach, really appreciate the time. Before I let you go, did see the story the other day that you were going to author a children's book. Are you able to share with us many of the details of that project?
Well, that's what happens to football coaches. You just have too much time on your hands, so you get to, you know, a chance to do something like that. But, you know, I was contacted about doing it by a publishing company, and, you know, it just seemed appropriate. You know, when I say appropriate, you know, for me anyway, because everybody loves children, and being able to share some thoughts with young people, which you do anyway, I mean, but these are younger than the young people that we have, and just something that sounded like something I'd enjoy doing, and I have, and it hasn't really taken very much time at all. You know, the people that, you know, there's a co-author who does, you know, most of the work, so, you know, I shouldn't get too much credit for it.
Do you know when we can expect to see that?
In October.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, there is Bill Snyder. Always greatly appreciate his time and love getting a chance to talk with him. As the best of the game continues in Hour 2, hear from Stan Weber, Sean Snyder, and David Ubben. That's coming up after CBS News here on the best of the game.